You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ermil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com, use the promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your next order. There was a certain player that didn't need any kind of extra energy. That was Bam Adebayo. 41 points on Saturday night in Brooklyn. He put on the performance of a lifetime, shooting 70% from the field, 14 of 20 shots, including his first three-pointer of the season. I'll be talking about Bam, his growth as a leader, and how he ranks among the top players in the league later on. But as for the game itself, it was a disappointing 128-124 loss to the Brooklyn Nets on the second night of a back-to-back. But Bam's performance certainly took the sting off the loss considerably. For one, Miami's roster is still shorthanded. They were without Tyler Hero and Jimmy Butler, as well as Avery Bradley and Myers Leonard. Hero seemed like he was progressing as of a couple days ago, obviously dealing with some neck injury. He practiced a couple days ago, wound up sleeping off after the practice and then waking up the next day with incredible soreness, and so he was just sent back to Miami. So he will not be available against the Brooklyn Nets when the Heat take them on Saturday before Miami begins a six-game homestand starting next Wednesday against the Denver Nuggets. So they'll need Tyler back for that. Hopefully he'll be available at that point. Jimmy's still out. Avery Bradley, Myers still out with that shoulder injury. It's going to be a shorthanded roster for a few games still. But anyway, the Heat started their 11th different lineup on Saturday night against Brooklyn and the Nets, led not by Kevin Durant or by Kyrie Irving or even James Harden, but rather sharpshooter Joe Harris helped the Nets build an 18-point lead early on, and it had all the makings of a serious blowout. Miami couldn't hit a shot. Brooklyn couldn't miss. Bam kept working, leading the charge for the Heat, scoring 12 points in the first, 9 in the second, 8 in the third, and 12 in the fourth quarter on his way to career-high 41. Miami crawled their way back into the game, however, hovering anywhere from 6 to 12 points down until a late run helped cut the lead to just 1. But the Nets, they kept responding every time, as you would imagine, considering the level of talent they have, the kind of scoring potential that they have there. James Harden struggled a little bit from the field. Kyrie Irving looked fairly sharp. Kevin Durant, incredible as an offensive player. 31 total points, 11 of 19 overall from the field, 4 of 7. It seemed like he's just an effortless stroke there. Although, I mean, just a really, really big night. I'm sorry, Kyrie actually had 28 points. Joe Harris finished with 23. Just, I mean, again, when Harden scores only 12 points, you think you might have a chance, and then all of a sudden you get a guy like Joe Harris. No knock on him, but not the player that you expect to beat you when you have so much top-end talent on that roster. Unfortunately, again, they just kept finding a way to chip away or to kept extending the lead when Miami got within striking distance. They were right there a number of occasions throughout the game. Even cut it to within 24 seconds left in the game, they wound up pushing the lead to 6, and they were seemingly on their way to the win, but then Duncan Robinson responded. He had a big night too, 18 points. Nice night for him. He hit a 3 to cut the lead in half. Then Kyrie responds with 2 free throws on a dubious foul call to push the Nets lead to 5 before Duncan was fouled in a 3-point attempt by Irving himself with 8 seconds left. He hit all 3 of those, and the score was 125-123. So Miami only down 2. Then Kyrie gets fouled again as the Heat kept trying to cut into the lead, stopping the clock. And he makes his first free throw, then misses a second. He gives the Heat a chance to tie the game with 7 seconds left. But there was some weird confusion there from both Eric Spoelstra and the players on the court. They got the ball after the missed free throw attempt, and rather than call a timeout and stop the game, they wound up pushing the ball up court and drawing a foul. Bam brings the ball up court. He actually drew a foul. I think James Harden wound up fouling him, strangely enough. Eric Spoelstra said after the game, I think that he tried to call a timeout, and then the ref didn't hear him, which is weird because it's not like there are any fans, and it wasn't like yelling, and he said, nobody could hear me with this mask on. It's so just difficult to hear. He tried to call a timeout, whatever. It seemed like by that point, he wasn't really fighting it too much. It was just, that wasn't the reason the team lost, according to Eric. And that's understandable. He never boils it down to just one bad call or one missed opportunity, which is why he doesn't give a damn about the foul call challenge or anything like that. He doesn't use the coach's challenge very often because he just doesn't like having the game distilled to just one key point as opposed to just, you know, slowly building good habits to get the victory.
In any case, Bam gets to the line, and then he misses the first free throw attempt and then hits the second one, which you'd think he would have tried to do the other way around, where he tried to hit the first one and then would miss the second one on purpose so he could get the ball back. But by that point, it was a little bit too late, just a few seconds left in the game. And then James Harden gets fouled, and he puts the game away by making both shots at the line, and Miami falls to 128-24. So that was the game in a nutshell. The record for the Heat drops to 6-9 overall. They got some nice games from Goran Dragic and Kendrick Nunn, but as a team, they really struggled with their three-point shooting, going 13-46 from behind the line. The Heat will get a rematch against the Nets on Monday, and again, they'll be without Jimmy and Tyler for that game as well. But for tonight, it's all positives, baby, because Bam Adebayo looked absolutely incredible. 41 points on the night, a career high again, 12 of 14 at the line. He was drawing fouls from DeAndre Jordan or Jeff Green or Kevin Durant or whomever. Whomever was out there trying to limit what Bam could do, nobody could stop him. It was the kind of performance that we had all hoped we could see from him a lot sooner in the season, and we all expected it to be there. And I think that's a little unfair, something I'll talk about a little bit later as far as these expectations about Bam and what he can do offensively and how he moves forward from this incredible performance. So that's a lot to boil down. But for now, just a really great night for him. 14 of 20 from the field, and not in the kind of shot-making ability that you would expect from Bam. It wasn't like he was putting up dunks. Only two dunks, I think three shots in total, maybe four shots around the rim itself, like a couple layups, two dunks in the paint, maybe a total of 10 shots, including those four at the rim. But those were jump hooks, jab step jumpers, just a floater in the lane, showing the full bag there for Bam Adebayo. And then four shots from outside the restricted area. And just, again, that jab step is a legitimate weapon for him. He looked really, really confident using that. He had two buzzer beaters, including a three-pointer at the end of the second quarter that looked absolutely smooth, and then another buzzer beater from about 20 feet out, 21 feet out at the end of the third quarter that might as well, again, Eric Reed almost thought it was a three-pointer. He got confused there until realizing on the replay that was, in fact, a two-pointer. So a nice long-distance shot from him. You're starting to see that Bam has that kind of range, that he has confidence in that kind of shot. And I think we're going to start to see this more often throughout the course of the season. We've already seen the mid-range game expanded, that it's a comfort level. It's about walking that fine line between still dishing the ball, making sure that he's also aggressive with his shot. Tonight, he finished with 5 rebounds and 9 assists. So he was absolutely doing everything possible. Consider that. I mean, you'd have to track each one of those assists, but he was responsible for at least 60 of Miami's points then. If you consider that 9 assists, and those might have been on three-pointers on more than one occasion, but let's just say they're all twos. That's an extra 18 points on top of the 41 points he added himself. So he's responsible for 60 points. Those are Nikola Jokic-type numbers. Those are James Harden-type numbers when he's putting up a lot of shots and also being, you know, able to distribute the ball. That's the kind of superstar performance that we expect from Bam Adebayo. An incredible night from him. Just a really, really fantastic showing. Playing his usual defense as well, trying to limit Kevin Durant. Of course, DeAndre Jordan, not quite the threat he was once, but as far as Bam is concerned, he's able to guard almost everybody, 1 through 5, pretty easily, and he did a fantastic job of that. Only had one turnover. Miami as a team is improving in that regard with only 8 turnovers tonight, but for Bam to have the ball in his hands as often as he did in clutch situations and only turn it over once, a huge night from him. Efficient, effective. Unfortunately, after the game, all he could speak about was coming away with, or not coming away with, the W, so he was clearly focus on just getting the win, as you would expect from him. But there are still questions about Bam's aggressiveness, about what's next for him, and whether or not he fits in as a leader on this team. And I'll try to answer those as best as I can here on the number one Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and more. But you know what? If you're looking for a little energy, if you want to be a little bit more like Bam Adebayo and just play consistently on both ends of the ball, then what you need is a Built Bar because it's the best tasting protein bar ever. And believe me, you'll love it. 18 amazing flavors, 6 new ones, 12 classic flavors, all of them good, all of them 100% covered in chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. You don't even know you're eating a protein bar, but you get that boost. You get the nutrients that you need if you're looking for a great snack to indulge in and you still want to look, you know, your best and you still want to try to watch your weight. Then Built Bars are the snack for you because they're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber, and they're great for all sorts of diets. And best of all, if you go to BuiltBar.com right now and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. So use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. The NBA doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, you get daily picks and quick hitting advice from experts to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. So there's so much to boil down for the conversation about Bam Adebayo, because I feel like even as we're watching this, and maybe it's just the nature of Heat Twitter or every fan base probably to some extent, but even as he's putting up those shots, there seems like there's this mix of tweets about how great he's playing and then like, finally, why wasn't this a couple games before? Why hasn't he done this all season long? And it's so difficult to navigate this. And again, I think a big part of it is social media in general. Like the need to put your thoughts out there as quickly as possible with little nuance and just responding to things as soon as they're happening, you're going to have some takes. And it's just, it's unfair to me. Like one of the things I said, again, this is just me being old and cantankerous and well-balanced as far as my opinions tend to be. I feel like I just want to appreciate what Bam did. Like it's a great night from him. Eric Reed mentioned it during the broadcast. We haven't had a 40-point outing from anybody in a Heat uniform, not Josh Richardson, not Jimmy Butler, not in the playoffs anyway, but not in the regular season, not since Dwayne Wade did it 6 years ago. I mean, that's a long time in between 40-point outings. And that just goes to show you what kind of a player Bam actually is, that he is that good, that he is that capable of doing so much. Like, and here we are saying, well, where the hell was this last Wednesday against, you know, blank team? Why can't this be every night? Well, you know what? Because it can't be every night. And I don't know why the gap is. I don't know why it exists. Look, we look at what Bam Adebayo is at 23 years old. And the fact that he's here now doing this. Like, we've never had a 23-year-old play this well in a Heat uniform. And we're still putting expectations on him and still putting pressure on him to be a 40-point scorer every game? How unrealistic is that? And I understand that there's frustration there because it's not that he's not putting up 40 points. It's that he's putting up 17 points or 15 points with, you know, 8 rebounds and 7 assists, that he's not taking the shot aggressively, that he's not looking to score. Well, sometimes he doesn't have it dialed up. What can I say? I feel like it's a comfort thing for him. And I know that there has been throughout the first 3 seasons of his career. And remember, he's in year 4. This is his 4th year in the league. He's only 23 years old. And he already is a one-time All-Star and an All-NBA type player. Just shy of it. Can we cut the man some slack here? I don't know. I just feel like we should be a little bit more appreciative of what's going on. And I feel like he's going to be able to do it. And now, it kind of ties into a question that I got via email. Not via Twitter, using the hashtag AskLOHeat, but rather, again, via email. This one comes in from Hayden Beavis. Hayden has written in a number of times, and he asks, a couple days ago, actually, he writes, "Hey, David, Jimmy and Goran seem to be natural leaders. When either are on the floor, there is a feeling of settlement." I guess meaning that the team settles down and feels more comfortable level. But then he follows up with, "Is Bam a natural leader? I can't tell," he says. "Is that something that can be taught? Will it come with experience? I would like to feel as settled with Bam on the floor as the general as I do with Jimmy and Goran." There's a lot to kind of work into this when you think of it from what a leader is and what that means. There are leaders on this court, and there are leaders off the court like Udonis Haslem. Even a guy like Myers probably provides some of that settling that comfort level that players need because he's so vocal, because you know what you're getting with him. There's a level of expectation. Well, you know, Myers is going to do this, and I can rely on Myers to consistently do that because that's who he is as a player. That's who he's always been as a player. With Bam, I feel like it's somewhere along the same lines. I don't know. It's kind of tough to quantify what leadership is, but I think Jimmy and Goran have the ball in their hands a lot, and they initiate offense. And I've made the point with Jimmy before. He is one of the few players in the league that I think understands when to score, when to dish the ball, and when to kind of just let things work out organically. And he's good enough to be able to say, no, I'm going to take over now. I'm going to do this. I feel like Bam's not quite there yet. And Goran, not quite as good as Jimmy, probably not even as good as Bam, but just feels, has a more natural feel because he's always got the ball in his hands. He's always had it throughout his career. I mean, you think back to when the Slovenian team won the EuroLeague a couple of years ago. It wasn't Luka Doncic that was making those big plays. It was Goran Dragic. You know, Luka, a little bit younger, maybe not ready, although he'd already been a phenomenal player internationally. I think Goran still had that natural, well, give me the ball. I'll make sure we do the right thing. I think Bam's getting there. I think he's more vocal at 23, and that's its own unique challenge, right? It's like, how does he get into the face of 27-year-old Kelly Olynyk or, you know, 36-year-old Andre Iguodala, who's won multiple championships? You know, what is Bam going to tell a guy like that? He's going to yell at Andre Iguodala and say, no, you're supposed to be here. I mean, that's really difficult to get to that comfort level. And still, I think that Bam is achieving more of that comfort level. He feels a little bit more accepting of and understanding that he has to be more vocal because that's what's expected from him. He's got the talent now. I think now it's not just a matter of talent. It's understanding your role a little bit better. Even a player as good as Bam needs to understand his role as far as when to walk that line of being passive and getting the ball to other players and being aggressive and trying to take over the game. That's still something that he's struggling with to some extent. Tonight, he did both. 9 assists and 41 points. That's a well-balanced game. And so I think he's going to figure it out more often than not. And we can only hope that this is going to be a more consistent part. But let's look at it from another perspective then. How does this version of Bam play alongside Jimmy Butler or Tyler Hero? Like, that's the whole thing, too. It's like, yes, we love this version of Bam putting up these kinds of shots as often as he does. But how realistic is that when you've got Tyler and his high usage holding the ball as often as he does, looking to get himself scoring, right? Or with Jimmy doing the same thing. And it's, again, Jimmy, I think, is more likely at this point in his career to kind of step up, take a step back and say, no, you got it, big man. You run the offense the way you do. And I feel like he's done that on past occasions. Tyler, I'm not so comfortable with him taking a step back just yet. I don't think he's quite as comfortable with that idea. So that's going to be the bigger challenge is once you start to incorporate these players, once they're healthy and available, will we see this version of Bam moving forward? On some occasions, yes, and on some occasions, no. And I think we still have to cut him some slack because he's just not that kind of a player. Those type of players are very, very few and far between. You look at Brooklyn right now. They've got three of them in Harden and Durant and Irving. Guys that you can just give them the rock and they'll figure it out and they'll put up some – they'll get you buckets. And I don't know that it's going to work out. Like, I still have high expectations for that Nets team. I think they are title contenders legitimately, even though they still have some gaps there. But it doesn't bode well when you have Irving and Durant putting up the points that they do and then Harden not feeling the same rhythm, that he's a little bit out of it and only scores 12 points in a night. If James Harden had only scored 12 points in Houston, I think Rockets fans would have been despondent for a week. They wouldn't have known what to do. You know, a 12-point outing for James in Houston would have been unthinkable. And that's because he had the ball in his hands and he could control the offense as much as he does. That's not realistic in Brooklyn when he's playing alongside Durant and Irving. And so I think we still have to temper our expectations about what Bam can be. We're going to have big nights from him where other players are going to recognize, he's got it dialed up. He's got it going. Give him the ball and let him work. And he had that luxury of doing it today because Who was going to take that opportunity from him? Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, even Goron? No. I mean, they were feeding Bam frequently. They gave him the ball, and he was able to do whatever he wanted against Jeff Green, DeAndre Jordan, and others. So I wouldn't expect these kind of outings from him moving forward, but it was still good to see on one particular night. And again, a career high, exciting performance. Let's try and take the positive out of it and not weigh too much about, you know, what happens next or whether or not other players will take away his opportunities or whether or not he's been, you know, missing these opportunities in the past. Right now, we know that he's capable of this. We've probably known about this side of him for some time, but he's still trying to figure out that balance. And I think he's done a mostly fantastic job of it. And I don't think we should complain so much about those nights when he is quote unquote passive and when he's not as aggressive as we'd like him to be. But I'll talk about KZ Opala, Jimmy Butler's status, and where Bam ranks among the league superstars in the next segment here on Locked On Heat. If you want to place a bet on Bam Adebayo's MVP chances or the NFL playoffs or even the rest of the NBA games, there's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust as a network. And that's betonline.ag. If you sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get a 50% welcome bonus. Again, there's the NFL, there's the NBA, there's a million bets that you could make out there. If you want to make a little extra money, you don't want to sit on the sidelines anymore, you want to get on the action, well, don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Reminder, they can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and leave a review. So, again, a couple questions I received using that hashtag. Thank you so much to everybody who's sending questions and continues to do so via email and DM and others. But this one was one that I'm asking because I'm curious, after seeing performances like tonight, where Bam Adebayo ranks among league superstars. It's still... Okay, all of this is so subjective. There's no criteria for what you think. Is it points? Is it defense? Is it, you know, plus minus? Is it VORP? Is it, I mean, what is it that you use to quantify what a you know, net rating? What is it that you're looking for as far as your criteria for defining what a superstar is or where Bam ranks among them? So I don't know that I have an answer necessarily for this, because you look around and you could make a case. Look, my esteemed colleague, Philip Rothman-Reich, over at Locked On Magic, he tweeted out recently, Nikola Vucevic is an Eastern Conference All-Star. Maybe he's right, but I followed Vuce's career in Orlando for a while. I know what he's capable of. A hell of a shooter, an underrated passer, great offensive player, not the defender that Bam Adebayo is. And so how do you weigh that? Do you weigh points more than defense? You weigh defense more than points? I mean, is it the offensive impact or defensive impact? We'll look at a player like Nikola Jokic, who struggles in the defensive end to some degree, but still initiates so much offense. Like, there is legitimate and probably well-deserved talk of Jokic being an MVP candidate. But, you know, there's holes in his game. Look at Russell Westbrook, an actual MVP. Look at Giannis Antetokounmpo. He can't hit a shot from 15 feet out. But he's still a two-time MVP. I mean, there is a lot of different ways of looking at this, and I don't know that there's a right one. So to me, I'm getting into the discussion of what Bam, where he ranks, and I have to say, just off the top of my head, I'd say he's probably top 20-ish. And that's pretty damn good. Like, you think about 30 teams around the league. You've got multiple teams with multiple superstars on them, like the Lakers, the Nets. The Nets have arguably three top 20 players on their roster. Maybe Kyrie doesn't qualify, but Harden and Durant certainly do. They're top 10. You've got two top 10 players in the Lakers. That's four right there. That's a pretty impressive number. You got Jimmy Butler, again, arguably top 20, although we haven't seen what version of Jimmy will come back. I mean... For Bam to be up there because of his defensive impact, because of his offensive potential, that's pretty good. I mean, Dame Lillard's a hell of a player. CJ McCollum is playing phenomenally. Luka Doncic is certainly up there. Where do you quantify Domas Sabonis Where does this year's Victor Oladipo rank? You know, these are the kinds of questions. Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, you listen to 76ers fans, and I feel like they're mostly right. Ben Simmons may not be able to shoot, neither does Giannis Antetokounmpo. He makes an impact elsewhere. And I think Sixers fans, perhaps a little, I mean, not a little, they're biased, and I think that's just reality. They see his overall impact, and it's not limited to just his offense. So there's some questions there, and I don't, again, if I had to say, and I don't think there's any perfect means of gauging a player's rank or trying to figure it out. We've talked to Rob Mahoney, formerly of Sports Illustrated, when he puts together his annual list of the top 100 players, and he's mentioned it. Look, it's subjective. You weigh what you can. There's no way of knowing the nuances of what a player can and can't do on every nightly basis because, you know, you can't watch all those players all that much. You can't figure out, you know, what when a player has a bad game, what went wrong exactly, or why that's not the why is that the norm, or why isn't it a norm, etc. So I feel like this kind of discussion is mostly futile. It's fun. It's fun to rank, and it's fun to also kind of say, yeah, Bam's a top 20 player. And I think that's right. I think that's fair. I think that's where he belongs. You could have him top 25, and that's still pretty damn good to me. So anywhere from top 20 to top 25, I think that's where his rank is, and I think it's well-deserved. Does he have to be dominant for Miami to win? No, obviously not. I feel this is another question that I ask of Bam after following his incredible performance, and a lot of people saying, you know, why can't he do this all the time? Well, because he doesn't have to, quite frankly. It's because you've relied on great offense from guys like Duncan, Tyler, Jimmy, a very, what's the word I'm looking for? Egalitarian offense where you share the ball. It's tonight it's you. The next night it'll be somebody else. We've seen this from this team in the playoffs where you had Goran step up on one night, Bam step on another, and then Tyler and then Duncan would have a big game. Then throughout it, Jimmy just kind of, you know, peppers it here and there, a 35, 40-point outing to kind of, you know, pick the team up when necessary. But overall, he does not have to be this dominant. What would happen if he was? I feel like if you get this version of Bam all the time, then somebody else on this team is going to suffer. Not through any fault of Bam's. It's just you're going to have to give him the ball a lot, and he's going to have to initiate offense and look for himself to score. And as a result, that he's not going to share the ball with Duncan Robinson, or he's not going to give – you're not going to have the ball in Jimmy's hands. You're not going to have the ball in Tyler's hands. There is only one ball. I know we use that kind of argument against the big three and make it seem like it's cliche or trite or incorrect, but the reality is there is only one ball, and those three players had to share. And it fell on guys like Chris Bosh to take a significant step back and for Dwayne to take even a smaller step back so that LeBron could thrive, which is arguably why those 4 years that he was in Miami were the best 4 years of his career. So that's the reality, is that if you're going to allow somebody else to step up, and in this case we're talking about Bam, then somebody else is going to take a step back. It's going to be Jimmy or Tyler or somebody else, and I don't know if that's necessarily what you want. You want to have these performances scattered where it's capable, or anyone is capable of having a big night on any nightly basis. This question comes in from Captain Flint. Somewhat jokingly, I think, how do we get Bam and Jimmy more help? I'll hang up and listen. I'm not sure what the joke is necessarily. Flint is a guy who interacts a lot on Twitter, and that's great. I feel like, is it a joke on Bam as a quote-unquote superstar? Is there a way of getting more help for these two players? I don't know that there is. I feel like the Harden situation, coupled with what happened with Giannis Antetokounmpo over the offseason and everything else, I feel like we're just spent as an organization. Like, they can't make another move anytime soon. I don't think Hero's going to be on the trading block. I'm sorry. I don't think Freudian slip, I suppose. I don't think Bradley Beal is actually going to be shopped around this season yet. I think it'll be in the offseason, if at all. And with good reason. Like, I mean, they want to be able to build on him. Now, I've argued this with Wes Goldberg on Locked on NBA, that perhaps for Beal, it's the right decision for him to force a trade. And for the Wizards, perhaps a realistic assessment and saying, look, we're not getting anywhere this season. Might as well tear it down and build up as much as we can for the next year. Maybe that's the way to go. So I don't know that they're going to trade away Beal. I haven't heard anything. I don't think it's going to happen. And even if it does, look at how much you have to give up to acquire a superstar player. I'm not sure if it's I'm not sure if that's where you want to do here this season, because with COVID, with injury, with players having to go into health and safety protocols all the time, it just seems like maybe you don't want to make that decision. It might be too much of a sacrifice. I don't know. I feel like Pat would probably make that deal in a heartbeat, even if you have to give up Tyler or somebody else. I think if it's just Duncan Robinson is the final point, the final straw that he doesn't necessarily want to include for a guy like Beal, and then you trade away Precious, you trade away Kendrick, you trade away first-round picks, you do whatever you have to pick swaps from here to eternity if it gets your guy like Beal, but I don't know that's going to happen this year. Baby Goat Burner asks, what's wrong with Jimmy? Does he actually have symptoms? I hope he's all right. Again, I feel like I've said this a few times, and so this isn't, you know, to knock Baby Goat here, but the team is not going to say anything. They're not going to say, oh, yeah, Jimmy's got COVID, because they didn't say anything about Bam when he had COVID last offseason in between the hiatus before the Orlando bubble took place. They didn't mention anything about Kendrick when he had it. We were able to assess or you know, use our detective skills to figure out, well, there's 15 players in the bubble. Two of them haven't reported. The two who haven't reported are, oh, well, there you go, Bam and Kendrick. So at this point in time, both Jimmy and Avery Bradley still in health and safety protocols. At first it was, you know, reportedly due to contact tracing. We thought Avery had tested positive, and then he was just put in again in the overarching health and safety protocols where he wasn't identified as having COVID. I'm not sure why the Heat hasn't been comfortable making these things public. I'm not sure if the players asked him not to indicate it. I honestly don't know. My feeling is that he does have COVID, and hopefully he's okay. To echo your point, Baby Goat, I hope he is okay as well. He's been out 2 weeks already. 2 weeks as of this recording, and my feeling is that he's going to be back for Wednesday's game against the Denver Nuggets when the Heat return home. I hope. That'll be 17 days from when he was out. I think his that will be January 27th, and he was last scheduled to play on January 10th. And so 17 days from when he did not play, and there was a postponed game against the Boston Celtics. So the reality is that, you know, he's been out a while. We don't know if he's recovering. We don't know anything about his condition, and I don't know how likely he is to mention anything once he is available. He has not been available to media. I don't know that he's going to be available to media anytime soon either. This last question comes in from Jeff Nicholas, who writes in, are you excited to see Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero instead of Mo Harkless and Gabe Vincent? Yes. Simply, yes, I am. But Mo, you know, he's going to get playing time moving forward. As I mentioned last time, he did not play in a recent stretch of games there because I think Spo is trying to do his best job of doling out these minutes so that it doesn't take its toll on any one player. He had a deflection in tonight's game. He also had a corner three-pointer, so it looked like we might be getting a good Mo game. And then he takes a knee from Brooklyn Nets rookie Reggie Perry. Takes a knee right in his hip, thigh area. They listed it as a thigh contusion. He went down crumpling on the floor. They sat on the sideline there. You could see that he was clearly in pain. He did not. That was right before the end of the first half, and then he did not come back for the second half. So even though he started the game, did not start the second half also. As for Gabe Vincent, I'm bummed out about it because you like to see a story like his where he's a G League player. He's worked his way up. He was there with a bubble last year and then, you know, finally gets his opportunity. Had a big first game as a starter a couple weeks ago. The time is meaningless to me now, but against the Sixers, right after Jimmy's original diagnosis or whatever, whenever half the roster was taken away due to health and safety protocols and we were starting Max Strus and we only had 8 available players, Gabe had a big game. And since then, right out the door, like cannot hit a shot. Played some solid defense, had a nice drive to the rim, but tonight, just not a very good night from him. I don't know. I honestly don't know what the future holds for Gabe Vincent because it is impossible to understand why the shot isn't falling. Like, I just don't see it. I really don't understand. Gabe Vincent played 20 minutes tonight, was 1 of 5 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3-point range. I think he's a much better shooter than he's been able to show there. So unfortunately, just hasn't been able to play well, but let's hope that he kicks it up a notch because I think Miami could use that depth. But March Madness, only a few months away. And the future of the NBA, it's on display right now. So get a head start in next year's draft analysis by subscribing to Chad Ford's NBA Big Board podcast. Draft guru Chad Ford has his first Big Board of the Year out with profiles on Cade Cunningham, Jalen Suggs, Evan Mobley, and more. Subscribe to Chad Ford's NBA Big Board podcast wherever you get podcasts. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.